Hi, this is Rebecca Mortar, founder and CEO of Loan Design Club, and welcome to our podcast, LDC Designer Stories. We will take you behind the scenes and into the world of our under-the-radar, cutting-edge, and conscious independent brands. We bring the designers to you, their stories, processes, and inspirations. Get to know the real people behind these emerging next-generation brands. In this week's episode, I am joined by one of our longtime favorite designers, Natalie Simmond, founder of ethical and sustainable fine jewelry brand Amadeus. Natalie will be taking us on her journey, sharing her story, values, and what it means to be an independent brand. Natalie, thank you so much for joining me today. It's really great to have you with us.
Thank you for having me. I'm really excited to do this. We've been working together for about 2 years now, so it's nice to catch up on what's been happening.
It is. It's been a long time, hasn't it? Since December 2018, was it, that we started? Yeah. In Westbourne Grove, in that little shop in London. It's crazy. And it must be, what, like 6 or 7 pop-ups that we've done together now.
I know.
As one of our favorite brands, I'm super excited to have you on the show. Take us back to the beginning. Tell us how you started. What led you to start Amadeus?
Well, my background is fashion design. I was working as a fashion designer for some big, well-known brands. And I kind of started to see the other side of fashion 20 years ago now. So laws have changed, but just always been a very creative person. I saw how things were really manufactured, where they were made, how they were made. And I really started to get quite a strong dislike for it all. And I've always been doing also accessories for the designers in the studio. And it's something that I always really enjoyed as a hobby. So I decided to just go for it on my own and started off with a couple of private clients. And it just kind of developed. And at the same time, I studied sustainability, find out how I can get precious materials, which usually come from mining in my industry, how I can get a more sustainable approach to jewelry making. And I spent about 2 years researching how to make that happen. And then about 2 years ago now, I decided to launch Amadeus. And God, I did. It's been quite a journey. I very much appreciate that I have all this fashion background, which has kind of really helped me down the way of producing all these products.
So tell us a little bit about your earlier experience. So where were you working? So you didn't actually start out in jewelry then. It was fashion, it was clothing.
Yeah, fashion design, women's wear. Because I'm very lucky because I have a very international background and I speak several languages, I was able to work in Paris and Milan for some big designers like Jean-Paul Gaultier, Prada. I worked for Italian Vogue for a bit. I mean, a lot of brands. And when I was working mainly in Italy for some really high-end luxury designers, one day by complete chance, I went to one of their warehouses where they were manufacturing some of the leather handbags that I've been drooling after for years. And when I saw what was actually happening, in this case, we were in Tuscany, which is a very well-known area in Italy where they work leather. And I was expecting to go into like a building where you had all these people working. And I was taken to the seashore onto a ferry boat, and they had all these Chinese people working in the most disgusting conditions on this ferry boat. They literally had a mattress to sleep in, and then they had like special tools to make the handbags. And when I dare asked the person I was with, who was responsible for manufacturing all these items, I said, "What's going on?" And they basically, without any guilt whatsoever, explained to me that at the time, in order to have the Made in Italy branding, they could have these Chinese illegal immigrants on the shoreline, so it wasn't on Italian land, working in the most disgusting conditions. They were actually throwing into the sea all the chemicals that were used into dyeing the leathers and other things, which are really bad for the environment.
Yeah,
and these people were living, eating, working there. And these are handbags that cost an absolute fortune in stores. They're the bags that we see in all those glossy magazines and things like that. And they were all just so nonchalant about it. Like they just thought it was absolutely normal.
Would you say that was your moment, your kind of tipping point where you were like, you know, where you thought, wow, this is not okay. I don't want to be part of this. I'm going to make a difference, or I'm going to start looking at new ways that are better for people on the planet.
Pretty much. I think it's like all the glitter of the fashion industry just came off in one go. And yeah. The worst part is that when we left, we were in this car, and this is a very wealthy area in Italy. And I looked out the window and I was just thinking, what is going on? And I remember seeing the street signs in Chinese. And I asked a person, I was like, I don't understand, why are the street signs in Chinese? And it was because all these big brands all have their warehouses here. And they get all these people from China also to live here. They don't speak English or anything. And that was definitely my moment where I just thought, I feel like I'm part of a scam, and I don't want that. So that's when I literally quit within, I think, a week. And 1 month later, I was out and decided, you know, what I was going to do. But it turns out afterwards, talking to friends in the industry, that it was just the same thing everywhere. And I just want to emphasize that was over 20 years ago. And I know laws have changed. But that was my moment.
That's amazing. I mean, that is incredibly powerful. I think we all have our sustainability story, or we all have that time, that pinch me moment where we were like, wow, I'm going to make a change. I don't want to be part of this. And I believe there is a better way. Thank you for sharing. So tell me a little bit more. I mean, what was your next steps? Did you then immediately set up your brand, or did you work somewhere else?
I worked somewhere else because at the end of the day, I'd worked really hard to be in the fashion industry. And I just thought, let me just look at a different side to it. So I went to work for Italian Vogue as an assistant stylist for a bit, and thinking, you know, that could be like another side of it. And again, I was seeing things that were just as bad, like taking advantage of people, not paying people. And I just did not want to have any part of it. I just really was very disappointed for working so hard to get into the best school, do all of these things, to then find out, like, I just really felt like it was a scam. So after that, I got hired by L'Oréal Cosmetics, and decided to try to do that for a bit because they were starting to do a lot of things with celebrities and in promoting fragrances and things, and just for me to have some time to really think about what I wanted to do. But I just missed being creative so much, and at that point I felt that I gained marketing experience from L'Oréal. I gained PR experience and from working for Vogue, and obviously design experience. And I just thought, you know, I think at this point I have enough experience for me to be able to do something on my own. Because the challenge when you have your own brand is you need to multitask to such a level of doing, being able to do everything, that that's when I felt ready. I'm like, okay, now I can do it. So I started doing little things, custom jewelry, which I always did as a hobby. I was always wearing things that I made. I did some classes, some courses in Hatton Gardens to learn how to do the various techniques in jewelry making, because until then I could design on a piece of paper and have somebody else make it. I just did not really understand how to make it myself. So I went to school, did some classes there, learned, and then just kind of started building on that, made little things and started selling, made a little website, and then I started doing pop-ups with you guys. So we really met when I really at the beginning of me doing the brand. And doing pop-ups was fantastic because you got to meet people and have this interaction with customers where pretty much everything is online now, and for them to ask you. And I started telling them, you know, these pearls come from this farm in the Philippines that I found, and I was looking for a way to use ethical pearls, but because of the way pearl farming is, it was a very difficult thing. So I ended up finding this place in the Philippines and invested in the farm so that everything was eco-friendly, which in this case involves, for example, having all the baskets where they culture the pearls not touching the sea ground, so it doesn't affect the sea life, and all these other things that need to happen to make it eco-friendly. And telling these stories to customers, they start buying because they just love the story, thinking, yeah, oh, I'm buying a bracelet with some pearls, but when I'm going to wear it, I'm going to tell the story to other people. And I think that's how it started, really, for things to take off for me.
I love that you went and invested in the pearl farm, and you know, you went right to the source. Explain from your background and your story how important sustainability ethics are for your business. I mean, you know, apart from just the pearl farm, what other aspects of sustainability and ethics do you bring into your brand?
Well, basically, nowadays you can get a certificate made up by some person's cousin in Asia saying that these gemstones come from an ethical mine. So the way that I approached it, it's like I have to go there myself to see for myself where it comes from, what are their working conditions, who's getting the money. And by cutting all these middle people and having, you know, finding, I spent 2 years researching all these things, like where to go and stuff like that, and then go there myself. So for example, for gold and silver, we use fair trade gold and silver in licensed fair trade mines. Or we also, because I have a passion for vintage jewelry, I get vintage pieces and recycle the gold or the stones in those. Unfortunately, that's not a very commercial way to go about it, because there's not going to be 10 of the same antique jewelry item for me to be able to produce a collection. So we buy also what I call ethical stones, either stones that have been around for a few years. When you go to someone to buy stones in certain country, in my case, South America, they have stones that they've had for like 40, 50 years that have been sold and passed on. So it's not digging into the mine right now. These are things that already exist, almost what I would call like secondhand. So we try to use those as well. And then I found through various different organizations, a couple of mines, one being in Colombia, where it is just incredible the work they've done to be as sustainable as can be. They don't dig the ground under a certain amount of, under a certain level, sorry. They have this whole program where they, once they've done digging, they completely rework the surface of the land and replant crops and trees for the local villagers to then be able to financially gain from it and work and be in better conditions. And these programs also reinvest in the local community, and they don't allow a lot of big companies to go there. It's more like independence, and the money you pay goes into the money of those villagers, and you can see the difference. Next thing you know, like the one in the Philippines, they built a school. They now have internet. First time I went there, they were living in like literally tents. Now they have like proper little houses, much better hygiene. They have running water. So it also feels good for me to see how my little business has managed to improve their life.
That is amazing. That really is amazing. And tell me a little bit about the inspiration, because we've spoken about materials, we've spoken about the process and your values, which are just phenomenal. How does your inspiration tie into this? Your design process, what inspires you?
Traveling and experiencing different cultures. I'm very, very lucky because since I was 2 years old, I've lived literally in so many different countries. We were just raised moving quite a bit. So I always, even though I am French, I just feel like I'm just like a, I just call myself a posh gypsy. But I just love experiencing different cultures, the more random, the more different mixes. And it's what inspires me, is to see what other people do, how they live. And when you go to, I went to my last trip before the COVID started was actually in Cambodia. And I just love the different, the people. I love they work the way they work silk, for example. I learned a lot about silk techniques, which I then used into breeding some gold thread for a custom piece. So I just love to learn from other cultures. And that's what really motivates me. Obviously, at the moment, a little bit more difficult, but I can't wait to go on my next trip when all this COVID nonsense is over and dealt with.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's a great little segue actually into my next question. Tell me about the past few months for you. You know, we've all been thrown into this completely unexpected, unprecedented time throughout the pandemic. How have you been affected? How has your business been affected the past few months, and how have you navigated it?
Well, I actually caught COVID right at the beginning last March, and it's one of those situations where when you have a small business, you don't have like a huge team to support you. So if one person goes down for a while, and then everybody had to immediately work from home, isolate and stuff. I have to say, March, beginning of April, I just thought, I don't know how I'm going to do this, because I was not really well enough to be very active with work. Luckily, you know, I'm compared to other people, I was okay. But once I managed to get back onto my feet, the business completely exploded. I mean, our sales in the last 6 months have been absolutely crazy, to a point where I didn't project to be this where I am now. And it did cause a lot of issues, because I couldn't produce fast enough for the sales. When you have to get precious materials from foreign countries and COVID is happening, I couldn't get gold, I couldn't get silver. At some point, I even had to find a way. I was so desperate to get gold, to find a way from London to rent donkeys.
Wow.
In next to one of my mines to try to get locals to bring it. I know it was just crazy, because I just felt I have all these sales coming in, and I was like, I can't stop. I have to keep going. So, you know, working crazy hours, and that's when who you know matters. And that's when having a network of other designers really helps, because actually through LDC, I've become very good friends with a lot of independent designers, and we work with each other a lot. We help each other quite a bit. And I found a way to get all those things into the UK, and just crazy sales, so many new stockists. And I just felt if we're able to go through this and able to find a solution to having this problem, to be able to produce fast enough but have the right quality, it was just such a response from everybody out there, you know, for sustainable fashion. It just exploded, because sustainability was a big thing in the UK prior to COVID, but it really wasn't a big thing in other countries, for example, like France. And all of a sudden, people were just talking about being more responsible, look at the environmental impact since COVID, no planes, no this, no that. And everybody was just facing facts. You know, things are happening. What is this about? What can I do? And I think it really opened the doors for us for sustainable jewelry, because people didn't really understand that gemstones, gold, silver mining are terrible for the environment. So we started getting all these orders and all these clients asking so many questions, to the point we had to get like a special software on the website, you know, for people to talk to us, because they were asking a lot of questions about, you know, I really want to get something for my grandmother to pass on to my daughter. I want something durable. And we just kind of really developed a huge client base. So yeah, it's been tough, but it's been really good.
That's amazing. I'm so glad to hear that as well. And you totally deserve it as well, which is amazing. Your pieces are beautiful.
Oh, thank you so much.
Anyone listening, do go on the website. Amadeus is available online with us, loandesignclub.com/collection/Amadeus. Do check it out. All the pieces are absolutely stunning. And I know you're always bringing in new pieces or every so often anyway, which is so great to see. But I'm so glad it's been so good for you. That's such a great success story.
Thank you.
So since we've talked so many about these, about successes and these victories, and you've got so many, which makes me so happy. But tell me about one of the biggest challenges you've had. I know the beginning of COVID was a challenging time. Have there been any other moments since starting the brand or before that you've faced a big mountain or an obstacle and you've thought, oh, what am I going to do?
Yes, I think about 6 months prior to COVID, we hit a moment in any business where your product or whatever it is that you're doing, your service becomes quite successful, and you have to reinvest. And we did have a cash flow problem because all of a sudden I'm getting new stockists, sales are coming in quite fast, and you know, having to buy precious material is quite a big investment. And when you're a new business, you don't want to buy too much because what if it doesn't sell? So we're able to melt gold and recycle it from our own pieces. If something that we did in the past was not, you know, a huge success, which does happen, we can make it into something else. But I hit a point where I was getting, I was in contact with quite a large stockist, and the volume of the order, I just said, how am I going to be able to do that? I did not want to bring investors because I want to have full control of my company. We did have cash, but not enough to be able to produce something like, 10,000 pieces that they wanted in a month. So these are times where, again, through LDC, I met the British DIT, Department of International Trade. And I think being part of those organizations are also very important because they were able to offer support as to grants I could get, people I could speak to help me how to figure it out. They helped me to negotiate with the stockist and to find a solution to their problem. And in the end, we managed to achieve it. That's why I always say having contacts and being part of organizations and things is a huge support. And I think it's absolutely vital for any independent brand out there who is struggling at the moment. You can't do it on your own. I don't think it's possible. You can't do everything on your own. And you have to learn, be prepared to do it. That's when I see like young, new designers, fresh out of university. And I was one of those, being very passionate about their product. And they say, I'm going to do this now. And I always tell them, it's not that I don't believe in your product. You don't have the life experience.
Yeah.
And the professional experience to do this. And they always say to me, what should I do? I always tell them, go and work for a startup.
Yeah.
Where you're going to have to do coffee runs, talk to editors, talk to designers, you have to do PR, you have to do marketing, you have to be on your knees unpacking boxes or packing boxes and stuff. If you don't have that experience and you know that you can actually manage that, you will struggle so much having your own brand because you have no idea what's going to hit you.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. I get asked this question a lot and I always say exactly the same thing. My kind of go-to line is go and make mistakes on someone else's time and someone else's cash flow, because when it happens to you, it's not fun.
I completely agree. I completely agree with you.
Yeah, it's always, it's a good one, but it's, it's interesting you say that. I completely agree. So look, one last question. And I think this is a great way to wrap up. Mm-hmm. So tell me, COVID has been great, obviously challenging, but you've had a great success from it. And I think it's safe to say the success is going to continue, which is fantastic. And I can't wait to see how the business develops over the next, year or so. But what is your ultimate mission? What is this vision that you're working towards? Where do you want to be in 5 years?
Well, I have plans to release a solid gold range in January. I want to include other things aside from jewelry, still within the sustainable umbrella. We do so much custom work for bridal as well, a bit less due to COVID, but I want to release jewelry accessories, and then I want to do home accessories as well, which still involves jewelry. For example, like a tastefully bejeweled candle holder, things like that, that I get asked a lot from clients, can you customize this? And that's how we kind of think, oh, you know, we've been asked this quite a few times. I actually quite enjoy doing that. And also I really believe that in today's society, which is unfortunately still all about fast fashion, there's nothing left for you to give your children one day. I'm still in that generation where from my mom and my grandmother, I was passed on like a really nice handbag or some jewelry. But in today's society, you're not going to pass on a great book because it's gone digital. Everything is like really cheap quality. And I really want to be able to give to people the opportunity to say, I bought this piece of jewelry from Amadeus. It was affordable and I can pass it on to somebody else because it means something. So we want to be able to produce products like that. And like I said, home, lifestyle accessories and some handbags as well. So that's the plans for the next 5 years.
Amazing. I think that's a lovely way to end the podcast as well. You know, as you say, creating pieces that people can pass down for generations and creating these nostalgic moments. I think that's beautiful. And I think that's something that, you know, it really ties into the synergy between, you know, of what we stand for LDC and so much of Amadeus's values. So beautiful way to end. Thank you so much, Natalie, for joining me today. It's been an absolute pleasure.
Thank you. And thank you for your support from LDC for the last 2 years.
No problem. We love working with you. We love having you. We look forward to many more years.
Me too. Thank you.
So for anyone listening who's interested, please head over to the website. Do check out Natalie's pieces. They're all online. Amadeus. Beautiful, sustainable, and ethical fine jewelry. Have an enjoyable time browsing. Thank you so much, and see you at the next episode.